Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Wednesday, January 19th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning. I am Zach Smith, your host, here with Chris Drew to kick your morning off right. And as would always have it, as I feel like the Buckeyes, I feel like the Ohio State University does this on purpose. It's like they know what time we record, what time we do our morning show, and every time there is breaking news or something to talk about, it is released the minute after I tweet out or Chris tweets out on our Menace to Sports. Either one, the minute we promote our morning show, news breaks. And it happened again yesterday, Chris.
Yep.
Go figure. Kerry Combs is going home, going back to Cincinnati. And I think it's awesome. I think it's an awesome fit for Cincinnati. I think it's awesome for Kerry. Gets to go back to where he kind of got it all started, not only at back in his high school days, but also his first college job was at UC when Butch Jones hired him as a position coach and brought him from the high school ranks to college football, which is something that, you know, not all, but a lot of high school coaches dream about doing. And Kerry is an example of one that did it and had success and has had a great college coaching career.
Yeah. NFL. I was going to say, he went up to the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, he's been at every level of football now. So back to Cincinnati to be the corners coach. We essentially just traded. It was like we went in the portal and traded with Cincinnati coaches. But I do think it's interesting because not only has he worked with Luke, so Luke knows what he's getting. Not only will they have a chance to kind of coach, you know, he'll have the freedom to coach whatever he wants. Not that he, you know, didn't at Ohio State, but it was definitely it was a shit show. And it was an unfortunate situation, and really, it's gonna be awesome to see him take new life, I guess. And if I had a prediction to make, I would say that when Luke Fickell is done at Cincinnati, whether he takes a big time job, whether, you know, whatever the case may be, I think that's really the only out right now anyone could foresee at this point, other than retiring there in 30 years. when he takes a big time job, I think Kerry then will be the prime candidate to be the guy that takes over the reins, especially if they achieve success, you know, from now until he leaves. Right. I think that is a natural fit. Kerry is so well connected in Cincinnati. I'm talking high school coaches, business, you know, business owners. Then not only that, the administration, boosters.
I mean, he fits the mold of what you would want to be a head coach. I mean,
he does. He does. And he has
homegrown grassroots like celebrity there.
And Kerry Combs is a guy that if they achieve a success with Luke and Luke does move on to a bigger job, you know, a higher price tag job, Kerry is that lifer. He's that guy that if I'm a Cincinnati's administration and I want that program to sustain into the next staff and not go back to a random coach that, you know, might be good, might not be good. A lot of question marks. If I just want that program to sustain, I'm going to hire Kerry, and he's not going anywhere. I mean, he will be the head coach of Cincinnati for life. That will be his legacy, right? That will be what he gives back to the city of Cincinnati. And so I think it's a natural fit. And here I am already calling Kerry's going to be the head coach of Cincinnati. He hasn't even coached a snap there in this second tenure. But happy for Coach Combs, man. He is back in the saddle. No retirement for old Kerry. He's got too much fire and energy, too much piss and vinegar, as they say, to just sit out. And so that is good. It's on another front, that is, if you care about people and their families, that's great because every coach that was fired now is employed again. Mm-hmm. And Ohio State staff is rounded out. No one is out of a job right now. So that's if you care about people, that's a really good thing.
Yeah, and the last time Ohio State was kind of involved with a trade – what felt like a trade, I kind of not really super related, but basically traded DeJuan Mathis for Justin Fields when that whole swap went, when we got Justin Fields in, and well, then DeJuan ended up going to Georgia. That's pretty lopsided. But just, you know, last time there was a little trade situation, it did work out. There was other staff change news. Your boy, our boy, Tony Alford got a promotion to run game coordinator. Like you said, Zach, how happy are you for him?
It's great. It's awesome. I love Tony. Tony's a great coach. I've already said that on the show several times. I think he needs to be a head coach. And so it's awesome to see someone get recognition, because that's all it is, recognition. Because at this point, now you have an offensive coordinator in Kevin Wilson. You have a pass game coordinator in Brian Hartline. You have a run game coordinator in Tony Alford. You have the associate head coach for offense in Justin Fry. And then you just got Corey Dennis sitting there like, hey, man, what the fuck? Can I get a title? Like,
hey, yo.
I'm just like, everybody's got a title. And it's just comical that people are like, freak out or get excited about it. Like, and I've said this for 3 years, like those titles don't matter. Because not only do you have those four titles, Ryan Day is running the offense.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, cool. Those titles are great. You think Brian Hartline is going to call the pass plays or design the pass plays? That's Ryan Day's baby. Like, no, he's not. I mean, he's always had a significant amount of say in the pass game, but and Tony Alford has had a say in the run game. It's not like Tony just sits there with his mouth shut and listens and then goes to his room and teaches his players. Like, it's, there's communication, there's involvement, and that's how great staffs operate. This is not like, it's not a thing. Mm-hmm. But
I do think next year, after the year ends, you know, calling it right now, I do think Tony Alford becomes one of the very hot names for either an OC job or potentially a head coaching job after the season. I think Ohio State has. I think bringing in Justin Fry, I think the run game is going to explode. I think people are going to look at his recruiting resume, see the run game coordinator tag next to his name, be like you said, oh shit, like that's a sexy hire. Run game coordinator, you know, brought in 5-star running backs. The run game, you know, was one of the tops in the country. Like, I think next year he's going to be one of the hotter names among coaching circles.
Well, yeah, and you know how it is. It's all about production on the field and having a great, exactly, especially a running back coach, having a great player. He's got the best running back in college football, in my opinion. And
now with Justin Fry, I think that elevates his stock, you know, Justin Fry more, because, like, I expect the offensive line of the run game to be even better, because we know that Justin is a hell of a coach, and the run games behind him have always been very impressive. And I think Tony will significantly benefit from that and start to get more recognition, which he deserves nationally.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I think it's just, it's all, anytime you see titles like this, it's two things, right?
A resume builder.
Mm-hmm. Number one, it's a way to justify giving them more money, giving them a raise to keep them around. Tony was courted by LSU, and Brian Kelly was courted by Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman. So it's a way to kind of, you know, up the ante, as we talked about with bringing in Jim Knowles. Like, it's not that hard to keep your coaches. You just are going to have to open the checkbook when the time comes. And that's what Ryan Day did. He wanted to keep Tony Alford. So that it's a way to give him more money. And it, and in doing so, shows you that Ryan Day values Tony, thinks he's a great coach, and doesn't want to lose him, right? Because it's easy to have just an average coach, right? And just keep him around, because they're not a bad coach. They're not the problem. And you just keep them around. But when coaches like Tony are getting courted by other schools, if you believe a la Mike Yurchik, if you believe that they're just average, then you just let them leave the coop, right? Let them leave the home. Let them fly away and, you know, open their wings. And you let them leave and go and try to hire what you believe is an elite coach. And so because Ryan didn't do that, because he gave him this title, he bumped his salary, because he didn't let Tony go to LSU, he essentially told the world of college football, the industry, and fans, Tony Alford, he believes Tony Alford's the best running back coach in college football. So that's the one side of it. The other side is what you said. It's just a resume builder, right? Tony wants to be a head coach one day, and giving him a run game coordinator title, I guess, looks prettier, looks sexier to administrators and search firms and people like that, that make those decisions, make those hires, get, you know, seek out the next head coach. And you saw Stan Drayton. Stan Drayton has been a running back coach his whole career, right? And he got a title here and there that made his resume look sexy. And eventually a school goes out and says, we want a minority coach, right? We want a black head coach, is what, I mean, that, whatever. This is not a politically correct show. They do that, right? They say,
whoa. But how big is your Martin Luther King Jr. collection?
It's not. I don't have anything. I know. I'm a racist because I don't own any jail logs that Martin Luther King signed or anything. Excuse me. Or anything like that. So I'm a big racist because I don't own any MLK Jr. stuff. But
just it's just a point to administrators that sometimes they're going to be looking for, you know, a minority coach and like what's their resume. And for minority coaches especially, your resume has to be strong to the point where someone who doesn't know football can look at it and be like, oh, yeah, like this person. Yeah, yeah.
Well, so. And they're just looking for coaches, you know, if you're going down that, and that's not just minority coaches, like that was Urban Meyer was, right. Urban Meyer was a receiver coach, never was a coordinator and got the Bowling Green job. So it happens. But they're looking for those titles mainly not because they're like, oh, this guy must know the run game really well. He's a run game coordinator. It's like, no, that's not what it is. It's that, you know what? Well, you look at his resume, you're like, well, this coach thought he had a lot of value because they gave him this title. So they wanted to keep him. So he must be a good coach. Oh, and then this other coach also gave him titles. That means they valued him and thought he was a good coach. So they're looking for a trend, right? Where people say Tony Alford must be a great football coach because Ryan Day keeps giving him raises and keeps giving him titles. And I think that was part of the reason, not to get in my own personal saga, that's part of the reason why Urban hated giving me a raise. he didn't want anyone to know that he valued me. And I could go into the full-on reasoning, but he was out of receiver coaches. He had three receiver coaches that played for him that would coach the position how he wanted, that he could just beat down psychologically, and that was Billy Gonzalez, who worked for him at Bowling Green, Utah, and Florida, and infamously, I told the story, left for LSU in a post-it note fashion. And when that happened, he hired Zach Azani, who was a complete clown show as a coach. I think he's a coach in the NFL right now. But I mean, just could not handle Urban at all. Was not a tough guy. Not a square jaw. Like he was more of like a. What do you want to call it? Like a he was reminds me more of like he's like a salesman, kind of a horse and pony show, a donkey show, if you may. And so that was never going to be a marriage that worked out again. So when he got to Ohio State, he really only had one option, and that was me. I was the only other receiver coach that he knew he could just beat down and psychologically destroy. And so he didn't want to give me raises or give me a title. I mean, he gave me a recruiting coordinator title, which is. I mean, I guess that's something, but he didn't want that because he didn't want people to know he valued me. I believe that's what I believe. But not to make this about me. That's just kind of a little glimpse into the world of titles, what they mean, like, and why coaches do them.
So also, I do want to stay on titles for a quick sec because Ohio State also hired Matt Guerrieri as a senior advisor and analyst. And it's interesting, Zach, because he was a co-DC at a pretty young age at Duke. And now, obviously, this is a different role, probably viewed as a demotion as a role. But what does that say about kind of the respect he has for Jim Knowles willing to take this maybe much of a step down? And what exactly does a... senior advisor and analyst do in terms of the football stuff?
Well, I mean, this is a huge move for a number of reasons. One, this is a huge get for Ryan Day. I mean, this guy was a coordinator.
Co-DC, right.
Yeah, just this past season. So this is not like a head coach that was fired and, you know, just trying to stay in the game. This was a guy that, you know, he's looking for a real job. Like he was a DC. And by the way, Duke wasn't bad. I mean, they were this year, but I'm just saying he didn't do a bad job at Duke. And so that's a huge hire for Ryan Day. This is the Nick Saban era of college football. And Ryan Day is showing you that he's ready to go toe to toe. They got they're going to follow the model and bring in actual real big time coaches and put them in analyst roles so they can expand their staff and get more done. And so I know like Parker Fleming has done an outstanding job outside of his special teams work in being that guy on defense where he sits in all the defensive staff meetings. He goes in, breaks down self-scout, breaks down opponents. And like last year, if you watched the defense, they obviously, when Matt Barnes took over, they had a complete transition from basically sitting in one high and going to more two high coverages. And so Parker did a great job of kind of analyzing what and giving his opinion of what he thought teams would attack, like what was their identity. And so that's what those analysts can do, right? And Parker's not an analyst. He's obviously the special teams coordinator, but adding a guy with that kind of value and that kind of knowledge and that I guess that presence in a room where Matt Guerrieri can go in, study film all day Monday of, let's say he might study the defensive film, Ohio State's defense, study it, break it down as if he was an opposing coach, and then come in and say, hey, listen, here's what they'll see. Here's our tendencies. Here's what we do. Here's what they will attack. Here's how they attack it. And then they can have a comprehensive conversation about, okay, what should we do then? Right. That's ultimately what it is. It's like, all right, here's what they do, right? Here's their breakdown. Here's what they are looking at from us, a self-scout. Here's the breakdown of our defense. Here's how they marry. And then that's what we think they're going to do. Now, what should we do? What should our plan be moving forward? And the more analysts like that you have in a room that can study things and have a knowledge, because in years past, you know, if you rewind 10 years, those roles were being played by 22-year-old guys that wanted to become coaches. They weren't great coaches yet. They didn't know football well yet, right? And so you're relying on a young coach to give you this information. And, you know, the great ones, the ones that end up having great careers, they do a great job and present great information, and you have what you need to formulate a plan. But not every intern or GA that's 22 years old that works at Ohio State is going to move on to become the defensive coordinator at the Tennessee Titans or you know, the offensive coordinator at Texas or whatever. Not everyone is like that. So there's times where, you know what, it might not be a great, they might not do a great job on the self-scout.
It does feel like a really good hire additionally, because you have someone that is coordinator level, a part of the room as well, to offer eyes. And that's kind of what I take away with it at the very least, another like high level ish coach that's available for your disposal. And I believe that really the more defensive minds in one room that are together, I think overall it helps not hurt, as long as you have a guy at the top with the final voice, the final call, the final say on things.
Yeah, there's no doubt. But the once there's another thing here that is important, and that is the familiarity and
with Jim Knowles.
Yeah, and the history, the relationship with Jim Knowles. It's just another guy who worked for what, like six seasons under Knowles at Duke. And so this is a guy that is familiar. Now, he will probably, this is also, I mean, even further to down the rabbit hole, this is also valuable because now you have an actual legitimate coach there in case something goes sideways, in case someone isn't as good as advertised, or in case someone leaves. You have a coach, you can just slide right into that position, right? Mm-hmm. You can slide them into a secondary position, right, or whatever. It's also going to be critical for Jim Knowles, because now he has a guy that can help him coach the linebackers while he runs the unit, right, a guy that's coordinated, a guy that knows his system, that knows him. So it's a huge hire. And honestly, one of the biggest hires they've made, in my opinion, even though he's not an on-the-field coach.
I agree. No, I definitely agree. Winter workouts have started, Zach.
God, I just want to ask this time of year,
just real quick, because obviously you guys weren't there for winter workouts, but how often would you check in on, especially your freshmen, to see how they were handling kind of the first phase of, like, you know, the grind that is the off season?
Yeah. I mean, we were there for almost every workout, for the weight room workouts. So the off season is interesting, right? Because there's two things going on. Obviously you're trying to maximize development. So it's not just you work out, you know, Monday through Friday, and that's it. And then you know, for an hour, you lift and run and leave. That's not what it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have those hour and 30 minute workouts daily, Monday through Friday, with Mickey Marotti in the weight room, in the indoor, pushing sleds, you know, doing all that shit, squatting, benching, all of those things that you do. But on top of that, three times a week, not only do you have your workout groups in the morning at whatever point your class schedule allows you to go, on top of that, you have 3 days where you come back, right? Or if it's like a Wednesday morning at 5:30 in the morning, you're doing mat drills, right? On Mondays, you're at 4 p.m., you have a team run, right? Or it may be position, you know, agility drills. so you're really getting eight workouts in a week, seven workouts, because Wednesday after mat drills, you don't really lift after that. But the coaches are there for the entire workout in those three other workouts, not the weight room workouts, but the team runs, the competitive agility drills, the mat drills. The coaches are running those with Mickey Marotti. So you have a full staff of guys working with players. And then you always have 20 minutes of position drills on those days where you can do drills with your guys all winter long, but you just, there's just certain rules about it. You can't use a football. So we used to use mini basketballs or tennis balls. Just stupid rules. Honestly, like,
can you use like a rugby ball? Like a rugby ball is okay, or like no football, no rugby ball.
It probably is okay, but not with Doug Archie. That would never fly because it looks too much like a football.
Man, I'm sick of Doug. But, man, honestly, fuck Doug.
Yeah, and but it's just it's I could go on for it's another rule by the NCAA that's really fucking stupid. I mean, why? What's a quarterback supposed to do for 20 minutes without a football?
Right.
Like, what's he gonna do?
That's so stupid.
It's so stupid. They would do ball handling, like work on run plays with a basketball. You had to hand off a basketball. I used to do receiver drills and throw them mini basketballs. Like, what are you preventing from happening? We're still doing drills. We're still coaching our players. I think it was meant to limit the time that athletes could be demanded to do football stuff. But like anything else, college coaches find a way around it. I mean, I used mini basketballs for 20 minutes, and then guess what? As soon as it was over, guess what happened? The footballs came out, the coaches left, and the quarterbacks threw with the receivers. So it's like they're still going to do this stuff. Why the NCAA doesn't allow the receiver coach to use footballs in position drills is just dumb. Yeah. Now, I didn't necessarily mind it because I still got hand-eye coordination work. They still caught footballs. I mean, it was still fine, but it's just stupid. But yeah, that's what's going on. So the coaches are around, and even those weight room workouts. I mean, I would pop in every single day in every single group for at least 15 minutes of an hour workout and check on my guys, see how they're doing, watch them work out for a little bit. I mean, what else are you doing as a coach that's more important than being around your players? Nothing. And so the big thing for us and my mentality of it was, if players are in that building, when they're there, spend time with them. That's important for your relationship, for the trust. Like, never would a day go by where players walked into that building and worked out and left, and I didn't at least see them. Because there's nothing, meeting about your red zone offense, that's more important than that little bit of time to build that relationship even stronger and build trust with your players. What's more important? The players, right? Obviously, you could run whatever the hell you want if your players are all bought in and going as hard as they can. So that's what the coaches are doing. That's what the offseason looks like. And this is really where a team gets developed. I mean, through the winter, every phase is intended for different reasons, right? Obviously, season is intended to win a championship. And spring ball is intended to kind of figure out the identity of your team and teach football. It's really like, you're undergrad for college football is done in spring, where you can really break things down and teach football to these kids. And then summer is getting in shape, getting in condition, and increasing speed and getting in football shape to go enter the season at peak physical form. So the winter is that unique time where it's all about toughness, strength, size development. It's all about transforming your body. And so, and that's why when you look at a team in spring, it's not always indicative of that football team you're going to have in the fall, because Mickey Marotti's not trying to get them ready to play football. He's trying to
get them stronger. And
he's trying to build them.
Yeah, build them as
he's trying to build them up, get them bigger, get them stronger. Right. The guys that need to gain weight, put 20 pounds on them in 3-4 months. Like, really get these kids to grow, and then they'll learn football in the spring, and then you chisel them. You chisel them in the summer with a lot more conditioning, a lot more running.
Beach bodies.
You got to get your season body right.
Mm-hmm. I have a theory that generally captains become really clear during the winter workout time. I think this will be a huge, huge winter workout for C.J. Stroud. Obviously, well documented, he needs to get tougher, needs to get a little stronger. I mean, we need him to be more kind of that, I hate using the word, but alpha. I do want to ask you before we get out of here, Zach, what was your favorite recruiting win and why?
That's a great question. I think there was a unique class that we had in, I don't even know what year it would have been, 2014, I guess. The 2014 class, I think, where there was a nucleus of guys that we signed, and some of them had an impact in that 2014 season, and some of them didn't until later, but it was really a nucleus for success for the next 4 years. And that was that class with Raekwon McMillan, Johnny Dixon, Jalen Holmes, Damon Webb, and that entire
one of the all-time underrated Buckeyes. I don't care. Damon Webb was criminally underrated.
Oh, I agree. But so two of those kids that were kind of in the nucleus, I guess you could say, of the class that really made the class go were Jalen Holmes and Johnny Dixon. And both, I think those are my biggest recruiting wins for a couple of reasons. One, they had become such great friends with Raekwon McMillan and several other players in that class through the, you know, the Rivals challenges and the Army All-American game and all the things that these elite players do together, right? And because I was able to get Jalen Holmes and Johnny Dixon, that bond was, you know, even stronger and helped pull Raekwon McMillan. And they used to get in arguments all the time, and I used to poke the bear about who came to Ohio State because of who. because Jalen would and Johnny would claim that they got Raekwon to come. Raekwon would claim he was like, no, I was everybody knew I was going to Ohio State. Like I'm the reason you came. And so they would argue about who got who to come. But they had such a good and then they were roommates. Those four that I just mentioned were roommates: Jalen, Johnny, Raekwon, and Damon Webb. And so I think those are my most proud recruiting wins because neither of those two kids, Jalen Holmes or Johnny Dixon, had any business going to Ohio State unless I convinced them to, right? There was no tie. They didn't grow up. Jalen Holmes grew up a Florida State fan. Johnny Dixon was going to go to Miami or Alabama, right? The hometown school or the number one school in the country in his mind. Like those kids had no tie to Ohio State at all. They didn't ever dream. Jalen Holmes didn't even think of playing at Ohio State. Mm. And so to get them, build a relationship with them and flip their mindset and have them, you know, favor Ohio State and then eventually pick Ohio State, I think was one of the hardest things I did in recruiting. And it also opened up a pipeline in both areas. So those two are huge. Cameron Babb out of St. Louis was another huge one for similar reasons, right? Now, Cameron Babb, I mean, he came to camp at Ohio State after his sophomore year, and that's when I offered him. And so he seeked out Ohio State, so it was a little different, but it built a pipeline. It built a pipeline directly from St. Louis to Columbus. And you're looking at guys that are coming to Ohio State now from St. Louis, and it's because Cameron Babb and Cameron Brown. Yeah.
Jalen Johnson and Jameson Williams.
Absolutely. And never mind. And people will look back at Zeke, but Zeke was such a unique situation, and we didn't recruit St. Louis after Zeke. Like Zeke was at a very small private school, wasn't a big recruit really. I mean, his final two were Mizzou and Ohio State. So he wasn't a national name and there wasn't a presence. Like Stan Drayton didn't recruit St. Louis. He recruited Zeke. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Zeke gave Ohio State presence in St. Louis for me to go in there and pull Cam Babb and pull Cameron Brown and recruit that area and kind of spread the Ohio State logo. Zeke definitely gave that presence, but it was about building pipelines because those things, they can be generational. Like they're now, if you're in St. Louis and you're a big time player, you're looking for that Ohio State offer where, you know, in 2015, 2016, that wasn't the case. I mean, no one looked at an Ohio State offer in St. Louis as like some benchmark of success. So I think those are my two though, Johnny Dixon and Jalen Holmes. And then Cam Babb was huge because of the pipeline that has been built in St. Louis. So as I watch these kids trickle in from South Florida, Virginia Beach, and St. Louis, I'm proud of the foundation that I was able to lay in those three areas of the country.
Sure. Well, I can't really argue with that, Zach. I wish I had more intel on that side of things, but honestly, I'm just kind of, this is a fan perspective, me looking from the outside in. I don't have anything else for today, but I do want to encourage everyone to go leave a 5-star review, ask a question. Friday is our mailbox edition episode. And then also, Zach, you're doing Super Bowl squares.
Oh yeah, Super Bowl squares. I gotta put a graphic out, but yeah, $100 a square. Payouts are $500 the first quarter, $500 third quarter, $1,000 at halftime, $3,000 in the final score. So $100, raise money for charity, chance to win $3,000 in the final score. Or you could be like one person this year won the first quarter halftime, or I'm sorry, halftime, third quarter, final score. So you imagine that. That's a clean $4,500 sweep. Mm-hmm. You could hit that up, Cameron Media on Venmo. It's just all one word, Cameron Media. Yeah. Or shoot me an email, Zach@MenaceToSports with any questions. And also stay tuned. I'm not sure. I'm still working on a recording time. But we have our main show coming out today. And it might be – I have a show prepared. I'm probably going to record it. But if I can get the timing right, Tate Martell will be on the show to talk about – his career. And so we're excited to have Tate on and appreciate those of you on Twitter that tagged him and requested the show because he saw it and he reached out and said, let's run it. Let's do it. So Tate Martell will be on the show. It'll be on our YouTube channel. If you haven't been there yet, youtube.com/MenaceToSports, hit subscribe, click the bell, and let's grow this platform at an exponential rate. But thank you for tuning in. That is all I got, Chris. Menace out.
Menace out.